This is Behind the Pixels.
Welcome to Behind the Pixels, the occasional podcast about how to tell your story effectively online. In this episode, I'm in conversation with fellow digital storyteller, Joel Buckland. We talk about the business of helping other companies tell their story online, and we give loads of suggestions about what you can do to tell the story of your business effectively. I'm with Joel Buckland, who is a media content producer. Joel, hello, how are you?
I'm good, thanks, Roger. How are you?
Yeah, I'm very well, very well. Thank you for taking the time to talk about digital storytelling and content creation.
Oh, well, thanks for letting me take part.
Hey, listen, you and I have touched upon this particular thing before. This whole thing of creating content and offering it as a service to people is relatively new. There are lots of people who will help you set up a channel, who'll help you set up a Twitter feed or a Facebook page, or in fact a website, or maybe even a blog. But actually populating that with content then is the next step. And although there seems to be a demand, or people kind of, well, there should be a demand because they've got to fill their websites, I'm finding it a bit of a learning process. And I think you were saying the same. What would have been your experiences there?
One of the sayings given to me was that people don't know what they don't know. And that's something I found with content production a lot of the time. There's loads and loads of rumors. There's loads of things that used to be true that maybe isn't true now. Things in this market move so quickly. If you're a few months old with your information, you're pretty much out of the game now. So there's things like, take YouTube, for example. It used to be perfectly fine to upload a really bitty video, very pixelated with sound that cuts in and out because there was nothing else out there, nothing competing with it. And so people were going there, were finding their communities, and it still worked. Now, if a business does that these days, it just doesn't work. They're wondering why they're not finding their audience. They've heard that YouTube, you don't have to be professional, and so they've gone and done it. And so it's trying to find... My biggest challenge is trying to find people who understand what they need, understand the importance of media content, understand the importance of how a story works for their brand or for their campaign or anything like that, and trying to get them to understand that and then want to invest into actually producing quality content.
And I think isn't that the key thing? It's, let's just roll back a little bit there, because you've already highlighted there is that kind of educational aspect. People don't know what they don't know, as you say, or Steve Jobs had this famous thing, people don't know what they want until they see it. And it's almost as if you've got to go out into the market, and it's not like you're going out into the market and saying, I sell bread. Do you know what bread is? And people, yeah, I know what bread is. I eat it. Great. That's an easy sell. I make bread, therefore, it's an easy sell. But to go out and say, you know, this is what I do and this is why you need it. It's, you've got that whole step that a baker doesn't have to do. You've got to do that. We as digital storytellers have got to explain to people why they can't just do the one video that they put up 6 months ago, 12 months ago, that was a bit dodgy in its production values to begin with. Now, I'm not saying they have to go super Hollywood on everything, but, it's kind of, you have to start explaining that to people. And then how do you come, because then the next thing is people go, yeah, actually you're right. Yes, I understand now that my video from 6 months ago, maybe I might need to do something else now, or I might need to do something more regularly. How then do you overcome the next thing that people sort of go, but I don't want to pay for it?
That's a good question. I don't know if I have the exact answer, really. I guess it's making sure if they've really understood the value it will have for them and how it can have a return for them. And I mean, a lot of businesses, that's what they're really thinking of, because a lot of the time you're producing a lot of content and there's not necessarily increased sales. Only if you're producing the right type of content in the right way will it actually increase your sales. So if you can really persuade them that this is something that will work for them, then they'll buy it. Unfortunately, it takes quite a lot of time. It takes quite a lot of effort to kind of teach people how these things work. It's completely different to what they're used to. The more content out there about content, I guess, the more people are going to understand it. I think we've spoken previously about a book called The Dream Society by Rolf Jensen, where he talks a lot about storytelling and how that works for businesses. He talks about a coffee shop, for example, that though it sells coffee, that's not really what it's selling. That's just how it makes its money. It's selling the community that you get at a coffee shop. And it's kind of really trying to get that into people's minds and let them realize, hang on, you're not necessarily selling your product. You're selling the story around your product, and your product's the way you make money. You concentrate on your product. We'll concentrate on telling everything around your product.
It's sort of, rather than talking about the features, it's the benefits that you want to highlight. And the benefits are the great ingredients of stories. And those, because if you're a business and you're concentrating on the benefits, and you mentioned community, which ties in with this very well. Well, your community builds up around the benefits that your product and your services provides them, because that's what they talk about. They talk about, I use this company and their service helped me solve this problem, or the benefit of me using this particular product from company X was this. And that's how conversations start. It's like anybody who speaks, well, who used to speak about Apple computers or Apple products, it was a computer. Well, loads of people make computers, but the experience of using an Apple computer and the benefit to most people was the bloody thing worked and it was very simple.
Yep.
And that's kind of where people, a community built up around Apple. Now, anybody, I'm sure that people bouncing up and down going, yeah, well, have you tried the map app that Apple has put out, or their first incarnation of their podcast app? Oh my God, that was dreadful. So maybe the luster is coming off, but yeah. And I think businesses, how do you talk to businesses about community, about the importance of building loyalty in that way? And how do you get them to buy into that, and how do you explain what they need to do? Because of course, if you're building a community, you can't go the traditional advertising route, which is to say, we're fantastic.
Things like Coca-Cola's happiness factory is something I look at quite often with companies. Coca-Cola had quite a bad rep for a long time. A lot of stories come out about the negative sides of Coca-Cola, but then Coca-Cola were deliberately building up a community around the happy side of Coca-Cola. They had vending machines that were giving out free stuff. And these, I remember one particular advert with a really long sandwich coming out of a vending machine, building up experiences. And when other people are seeing that, automatically in their heads, it's giving them messages of Coca-Cola happy, Coca-Cola positive. That builds up a community of people with the same kind of mentality, same thoughts about a product. Apple had the same thing. They would, when they had the computers that brightly colored and, you know, there's very, very simple design, they worked well. But they also had a guy who specialized in building up that community, getting people to say positive things, getting people to sort of meet up together based on their love for Apple. So there used to be clubs in America where you could literally just go and find out about the new things about Apple, sit around, have coffee and chat with other people about Apple stuff. And that was actually part of their branding deliberately done to build that community, because the recommendations is what was actually selling it.
And that's recommendations, referrals, absolutely. And you can generate those online. It's interesting you mention Apple in that regard, because of course, Apple famously doesn't have a blog, doesn't have any kind of social media channel. It has support forums where people bitch and moan about the products not working anymore. But that's about as much as it has as an online community builder. What I find interesting about them is they've almost hived off that entire function to their fan base, because there are plenty of blogs and websites run by Apple disciples, I suppose you call them. And that interests me, that, you know, that a company is actually able to do that they're leaving the storytelling to somebody else completely.
And that's it. And in a way, all brands end up that way. we can put out as much as we like as a brand. I can say what I like about myself, but people aren't necessarily going to believe that. Whereas when I do this kind of thing with you, the things that you say about me, that's actually building my story. That's far more valuable than anything I have to say. So I think all brands will end up going that way, where they have to kind of end up letting go of their story, at least to some extent. Maybe not to Apple's extent where they've let go of it completely, but then they've been so good at bringing in people and making them feel part of the family, if you like, of Apple, that they don't have to worry about these people turning on them because they do feel like family.
And that's, again, I find that the analogy to family is very interesting, because your family, generally speaking, unless you're very unfortunate, will stand by you regardless of whatever goes on. And then, of course, will fight your corner when you do release an absolutely shocking product, like the first iteration of the Podcaster app that they released, or their Maps app, which I used yesterday and I don't know why, I'm foolish. I used it yesterday and I ended up where I didn't want to end up, unsurprisingly. But when that happens, there are then people who will go into the breach for them and fight their corner. And that's a really interesting, I mean, for a brand to have been able to build up that kind of loyalty, it is like having a family. And I think the word family there, I think you've chosen really, really well. I'm curious actually how you see this business developing, because I'm mid-40s, you're a good deal younger than I am, and I always look at the generation behind me as being people who are going to be able to do this content stuff anyway, because that's kind of the world they're growing up in. Is there a finite time on this business, do you think, for us as storytellers?
No, I think as someone like yourself, you're in your 40s, you've got experience in telling stories. I mean, I've seen some amazing photography from you. That is, the more you do that kind of stuff, the more practice you get, the better you get at it. And though there's younger people, I mean, I'm in my 30s now, and there's some people younger than me coming up and nibbling at my tail, if you like. But they don't have the experience in telling those stories. And so they may be able to do the computer part of it. They may know where to put the stories. Although that's another interesting topic that I'll come on later, but they might know how to write a website or something like that. They don't necessarily know from experience what's engaging people, where to really emotionally reach out to people, and what to hold back. Because I think that's important with stories as well, knowing what to give and what not to give. If you give everything in a story, the story actually ends up becoming too dull because it's bogged down in the details and the journey doesn't go anywhere.
I guess I asked that question because you mentioned my photography, and what's happened in the photography business is that the value of being able to take a good photograph has dramatically been reduced by the availability of digital cameras, which have kind of taken a lot of the technical away from people. Whether or not they can then use the camera to create a beautiful photograph or a great storytelling photograph is another question. So I was kind of, you know, curious how that may impact on the business of actually helping companies to tell stories. But then, you know, I think you make a very, very strong point that you need, it's not just the technical, is it? It is the ability to connect on a very emotional level and know where to help your clients connect with people that's gonna do them the most good. So yeah, a bit of experience. I feel comforted in your answer. where should, you mentioned places to put information, places to put content. Where do you think are the best places at the moment? And we're talking sort of May 2013.
Well, that's something that a lot of people actually get wrong, in my opinion. I went to a social media talk recently. I'm trying to go to as many of them as I can in case there's information I've forgotten or not heard from yet. And unfortunately, the talk was very much Facebook and Twitter. There was a mention of Google Plus, but they said, oh, you know, it doesn't have much going on there, which is, since Google Plus has started, has been the excuse not to use Google Plus. I think if we dropped that excuse, we would start using Google Plus and then stuff would be going on and that excuse wouldn't exist anymore. I think people get it wrong because they don't think, who is my audience? If your audience isn't the audience that uses Facebook, don't put your stories on Facebook because you're wasting your time. If they're not the people that are on Twitter, don't put your stuff on Twitter. But work out who's using this stuff and where are they? What are they doing? What are they talking about? And then go to where they are. And I think a lot of companies forget that. They've heard that social media is what they need, and so they jump on the biggest brands in social media. One of the things I tell clients is, if you're talking to, say, a Chinese audience, you want particularly want to market within that community, and you're posting on Facebook, you may be missing a big chunk of the Chinese audience because China struggles to get Facebook. They have their own social media platforms, which you can then go and put stuff on. But not to say that Chinese people out of China aren't using Facebook, they are. But you've kind of really got to balance that up and go, right, where is it and who is it I'm talking to? Is this the right platform to be able to get to the market? Maybe Facebook shouldn't be my primary source of communication.
Yeah, I'm nodding. I'm nodding so vigorously. I think I may have pulled a muscle in my neck. I have this conversation all the time with people as well, where it seems that Facebook is the first port of call, and for many businesses, it is the right decision. For a lot of businesses, it isn't. And identifying which platform your target audience is on is a very, very wise thing to do. Now, for instance, if I were a camera manufacturer, well, Google Plus is exactly where I'd go, because the one group that have taken to Google Plus like ducks to water are photographers. And actually, you know, it actually turns out that Google Plus is being used way more than, I think that argument, nobody's using Google Plus, is starting to lose some of its validity, because I think more and more people are. But certainly, if I were a camera manufacturer, Google Plus is a great place to be, because the platform lends itself so well to photography that that's where lots of photographers have ended up.
Yeah, and a lot of people within the tech industry as well. I've not done this myself, but I've heard about a lot of developers and those kind of people looking at Google Plus and communicating through Google Plus. People that are into technology, sort of geeky technology, are using it. They were the early adopters. And so if that's the kind of product you've got, then Google Plus is a good place to go.
Hey, listen, we'll finish up. Just a final question. In your opinion, what is the strongest storytelling media at the moment? If you had to choose one.
Now, yeah.
For someone on the spot.
Someone that studied transmedia, then I've got to say transmedia, if that counts, because obviously transmedia takes in consideration all the other types of media.
that's a very clever answer. That's a very clever. I'll provide an answer which actually covers all of them.
Yeah, pretty much. Well, I don't think you can really communicate on one level. Some of the research I've been looking at talks about 70% of the world being non-literate. Well, and that non-literate means from completely illiterate all the way up to functionally literate. So the different levels of how they read and write. Now, if 70% of the world is non-literate and all the stuff we're putting out is text-based, then we're missing out a huge market. If all we're doing is writing a website and writing a blog, we're missing out on 70% of the world that we may want to market to. And a lot of people think that means developing worlds and things like that. And obviously in the world stats, that's included. But I also read, but don't quote me on this because I can't remember the source, that 80% of America is non-literate.
I heard that statistic as well. I heard it as a presentation. So I'm wondering whether you didn't read it off something that I wrote, because I heard it at a conference. But,
could be.
But the same bit of information is spinning around and around. And that's, I find that a really fascinating point, because all you hear about is SEO, search engine optimization. Of course, that's all text-based, and that's great. So you get to number one in Google with a text-based thing. And I'm not saying that you shouldn't have text. Absolutely not. I think it's part and parcel of the deal. But what you do have to realize is the point you're making there is, yeah, you could appear at number one in Google. Great. But if the person prefers not to take their content as text, would like it as a video or as audio, then you need to make sure that you've got content in YouTube. You need to make sure you've got content on iTunes. Otherwise, you are going to miss out. So I think, you know, your point is very valid.
I think the amount of companies I've seen who've put a video on YouTube and thought, that's it. A bit like they used to with websites. If I have a website, that's it. That's all I have to do. People will find it and come to it. And then they realize, hang on, that's not true. I do have to SEO it. I do have to create content regularly for it. People create YouTube videos and stick them up and go, well, I'm done. But they forget to put the description in. They don't put any captions in. So they leave YouTube to make a guess at the captions. But then you start thinking, well, what about the audience that maybe are partial hearing and they need those captions? Because if you read the automatically generated ones, they're often completely different to what's actually being said in the video. And so that company, one, is not marketing to all the people they could be marketing to, but two, that through those captions and through the description, that's going to SEO that video, because Google can't really pull out the words properly and SEO it to a satisfactory standard. If you put in captions and if you put in a description, Google has more to read and more way of deciding what the right keywords are for your content. So I think making sure you understand who your audience is, making sure you're producing work across multiple media formats, but photography, video, audio, text-based, interactive, person-to-person, all of these things will engage different people, and some people will choose to take on it all, some people choose to take on a segment of it, some people choose to take on just one part of it, but it's talking to them in a way that they want to be talked to.
I think it's a very good point, especially, yes, you know, speak to them as they want to be spoken to rather than how you want to speak to them. I think that's a good point. And the other thing that I picked up there, and I think that was really key, really important, a whole new discussion. I sense you and I may be revisiting this topic later in the future on this podcast, but is the whole thing about, okay, you've produced the content, great, and that, you know, well done, because there's effort goes into that.
Yeah.
But really, that's when the hard work starts, because, and I am the worst offender of this. You know, my job is to help companies produce content and then get eyes on that content or ears on that content. But for my own content, I am the worst person for producing something, sticking it up, and then not doing the very vital work of letting people know that the content is there. Yeah. And doing all the little things that need to be done to make sure that if somebody's looking for it or looking for information on a particular topic, that they'll find it. But also just to go out and tell the world, you know, if you're interested in this particular piece of information, there is this person speaking in this podcast or in this article or in this video that you might find interesting, might be useful to you. I'm terrible at that.
Sometimes you kind of create a piece of work and it's taken a lot of time to create that piece of work, and you throw it up on YouTube and go, oh, I'll come back to it later. And then you forget and you don't come back to it later. Or someone sees it and it starts to trickle out before you've really wanted to push it out. And at which point it becomes too late. The big wow factor is gone because it's trickled out and people have seen it and the interactions haven't been quite as good as it could have been if you went, here, wow, look at this kind of thing.
Yeah, you need very, very careful management and planning. And I also personally suffer from the shiny object syndrome, where I finish one thing and then I'm off, I'm distracted by the next thing, and I want to do the content bit, creation bit. I forget that's that fair. I have to go back and do the. Oh dear. Anyway, Joel, listen, this has been absolutely fascinating. I have a suspicion you and I will be talking again, because there's so much more on this topic, I know. But for now, thanks so much for taking the time.
No worries.
So that was Joel. I hope you heard something in all of that that will help you tell the story of your business online better. And of course, one of the things I should have done is I should have asked Joel to talk a little bit about himself and where we can find him. I mean, that's only just polite and etiquette. So he didn't get the chance to do that. So I'll do it for him. If you want to find out more about Joel, if you want to connect with him, well, the first place you can go to is his website, which is joelbuckland.com. He's also on Twitter as Joel Buckland. So do connect with him. He's a really nice guy and he really knows what he's talking about. So check him out. So that's it for this episode of Behind the Pixels. My name is Roger Overall. If you're hearing this in isolation and you've no idea where it has come from, you can check me out at thedigitalstoryteller.net, where you'll find loads of free information about how to tell your story online effectively. Anyway, enough of that. Let's go.
Behind the Pixels is produced by The Digital Storyteller. Thank you.